Welcome, ladies and gents, to the Grim and Bloody Podcast. This show is a presentation of horror, thriller, and suspense, and is intended for a mature audience. Join us at your own risk.
Happy holidays and welcome to another episode of the Grim and Bloody Podcast. Glad to have you with us. Tonight we're talking sharks with Steven Scarlatta, writer and director of the Shudder special Sharksploitation. Welcome, Steven.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And joining me, I have Kevin Nicholson and Joe Flynn. Good to see you guys again.
How you doing? I'm looking forward to this show. I'm looking forward to this to talking with Steven because I love everything Bruce the Shark, everything shark related. We're gonna really get into it.
Do you love Sharknado? Let's just get that out of the way. Are you a Sharknado fan? Like how deep are you in the shark?
Actually, for what it is, you just got to realize what it is and what you're in for. And as long as you do that, you're not disappointed.
Yeah, I love me some Meg too. We'll get into all of that. But today we want to talk about the Shudder special, the documentary that talks about sharksploitation, which is an actual thing. It is Hollywood preying on our fears of the great blue sea, the sharks in their natural habitat, and you throw a bunch of humans out there and shenanigans ensue. 1975. Was the year that the sharks, I feel, became the Hollywood tentpole.
What's that music?
And we had Steven Spielberg to thank for that. And I think it's still one of the classic films. And in Sharksploitation, it is heavily referenced. I mean, you do mention a bunch of others, but it's definitely one of the films, you know, that captured our imagination, as you will. But talk a little bit, Steven, get the ball rolling. What inspired you to make a documentary like this?
That's a good question. I just loved shark movies since I was a kid. And I did Jodorowsky's Dune. I produced that. And then after Jodorowsky's Dune, I think it kind of popped in my head to do this. But I kind of stayed off it for a little while because I didn't have an idea how to approach it, because I just didn't want to do just shark movies without any purpose, because I felt like that can get old after a while. So I just kept outlining it until I figured out kind of like a Peter Benchley angle to kind of have as a through line and as a heart of the movie. And then that's when I kind of started to move forward with it. But I love shark films since I was a kid, and I was going to do a book on it. But after doing Dune, I was just like, I wanted to do another documentary. So I just chose sharks. Didn't think much. I just kept outlining and then kind of figured it out and then went for it pretty much.
Now, a question for you is that when you watch the documentary, you realize just how far back Hollywood goes with its love affair of the shark. You're talking about 1930, I think your documentary starts with a film, I think it was called The Sea Bat. And basically at that point, it was not projecting sharks as killers or as monsters, but simply as just weird denizens of the sea that you'll run across. And it was, I think Hollywood was trying to use this as just a way to kind of, you know, give it an exotic feel to their pictures. And what was it, really just Jaws and Spielberg, where Hollywood decided let's make this into a killer horror film, a killer shark type of formula?
I guess before Jaws, there's been treasure hunt movies where sharks are a danger to the people searching for treasure.
You talk about one called Shark with Burt Reynolds, and so forth. So yeah, you definitely hit on treasure hunts on treasure hunts. You also talked about Blue Water White Death, which was a 1971, I think, film. So there is a love affair, but it was a kind of that Spielberg and Jaws just kind of had Hollywood saying, let's go there.
You know, I think it became, as you mentioned, a treasure hunt, like the shark is a danger or an obstacle you have to get around. I mean, Jaws became the primary antagonist, right, of a story. It became, you know, a way for, and I think through the book and through the film, and also I love the story as his name escapes me. He's the fisherman that says, I can go catch your fish, right? You know, you pay me. And they're trading stories. It became something like, you know what?
Quint. You're talking about Quint.
Yeah, Quint. Yeah. It became, you know, the shark, it haunts me, right? It's traumatizing, right? It became a deep emotional experience. I think that's what really fascinated me as far as viewer. I didn't see Jaws until probably 96, right? Yeah, when I was 16. But it was frightening then. And today, it's more of the themes in the movie that intrigued me. But yeah, it became, you know, from a danger to getting to the end, it became, this is your end. Right? It's like, you go in the water and you come across this, and it might be the last time you're in the water. I've always found sharks fascinating because they don't prey on humans, although there's been hundreds of reported, you know, bites. But it's just like you're swimming in their domain. It's like, what are you doing, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, to finish Kevin's question, and you're right also, it's that before Jaws, sharks are in movies, and they are a threat, but they're not the main threat. It's like they're touched upon very little. Like, they'll make it on the movie posters before Jaws. If you look at the movie posters for September Storm or any treasure hunt adventure movies, you'll always see a shark on the poster, but the shark is barely in the movie. You get like very few seconds of screen time. And then you're right. Blue Water White Death comes out. That's a documentary. But then, 75, Jaws comes out, and it's such a huge hit, and I think it introduced the world. Everyone was aware of sharks, but I don't think they were aware of sharks as much until Jaws came out, and it was just the fact that it was done so well that it freaked people out, because, you know, if a different director made it, I'm not sure if it would have had the impact that it ended up having, because Spielberg is so insanely talented that he turned what should have just been a B movie, you know, and just turned it into what it became. And yeah, then it just, you know, it just became, as you'll see in the documentary, just became this next level blockbuster where you couldn't escape the visuals of a shark. And then from that moment on, sharks just became everywhere. Comic book covers, you know, like movies and TV shows and
animated series.
Everything. Yeah.
Jabberjaw was an animated series that I just distinctly remember as a kid. And it's not particularly good, but I just fondly remember it. You remember that tagline? Yeah, Jabberjaw. Did you get an idea when you did this documentary? Did you get an idea of just the scope of how Spielberg changed Hollywood and changed our perceptions of the film world?
I mean, I guess I've always kind of been aware of that. It's going to film school and everything, just learning about, and also I'm older, so I grew up with Spielberg and just he was a phenomenon after Jaws. Close Encounters is gigantic, except 1941, but everything he was doing was massive. And not only that, then he was like executive producing movies like The Goonies and all kinds of movies. Like E.T. was a monster. Like his movies, yeah. Just whenever you saw, you knew it was a Spielberg movie because it felt unlike anything else. You know, Raiders of the Lost Ark. The guy, so I kind of grew up with him.
Yeah, there's a good 15, 20 years that he could do no wrong.
Dude's insane. Like I say, he's insanely talented. So I guess when I was growing up, I was in that world of watching him because I guess you can go back. I guess also Lucas is somewhat responsible also because of Star Wars. I think both of them together just totally changed Hollywood.
See, that's what it really, when I think of Spielberg, I have to start and stop, despite his career, I had to start and stop with Jaws, because it didn't just revolutionize make him popular. It didn't just revolutionize the thriller and so forth. It revolutionized film, because it was the first blockbuster, first summer blockbuster. So it changed everything regarding how we view film today. And so that impact cannot be going unnoticed. As far as that, it literally changed how we perceive film.
Yes, and, I agree.
It turned film from something you could do on a Saturday afternoon,
sure,
to something that you plan on. Like, we're buying tickets for, we're going to see this movie, and are you going? By the way, it became talk, right? It became
a phenomenon.
Became, we're waiting for trailers, right? It became, did you hear about this new movie coming out? It became the talk of the town. It's still happening today, albeit it's changed hands a few times, but you still have those tentpole movies in which not only are people planning to see it, but you also have other films that are working around them, right? It's a tentpole. It's going to garner this much attention. You want to move your movie before or after, right? Unless it's something of a completely different nature. It becomes movies that you don't want to compete against. And thanks to The Shark, thanks to Steven Spielberg. But Steven, I want to pivot a little bit and talk about your impressive guest list for Sharksploitation. You have Roger Corman on there. You have just a number of Hollywood's veterans in there talking about sharks. How'd that come together? Was it you that reached out, or did you kind of float this out there and people were reaching out to you? How'd it come together for you?
Yeah, I had to reach out to everyone. A lot of people didn't know I was making it. It got announced eventually. By the time it got announced, I already shot a bunch of it, but I wish people reached out to me to be in it. It would make my job a lot easier. Right. But I reached out. The first interview I shot was Roger Corman, because I got my start at Roger Corman as just doing electric or set work, art department. There's a lot of movies I worked on that are not on my IMDb. And yeah, the first one I worked on was Corman. So he was the first interview I got. And then I just kind of, I made an Excel sheet with every shark movie and I highlighted them like A grade, B grade, C grade, D grade of which ones I want to cover. And by doing that, that's when I just went down the list and just started figuring out who I wanted to get. And I just kept sending emails to every single person, and whoever accepted, I shot. Because, you know, I mean, I wish I could have got...
You got Mario Van Peebles. Hey.
Yeah, he was the hardest to get, but he was worth it. He was awesome. He's awesome.
Yeah. I was just sorry. I was going to say, yeah, I'd be like, hey, Steven Spielberg, come on in. Let's talk about your shark film for a second.
Well, you know. I was going to say, I was very impressed when you got Carl Gottlieb, who was, you know, the writer of Jaws, you know, basically. And you got Peter Benchley's widow to talk about it. I thought what was fascinating was how Peter Benchley's view of the shark and kind of what he did and how it changed. Where he went from writing the shark as this, you know, as this... this horrifying monster, this plot contrivance, and then he saw how the sharks were becoming targeted and hunted because of the bad press, so to speak, and he became one of the foremost conservationists when it came to you know, the sharks. Was that something that kind of surprised you, or maybe it didn't surprise you in a sense?
Yeah, well, to go back to the previous question, I was able to get a lot of the people because I was able to use my clout of working on Jodorowsky's Dune to get their trust to be in this documentary. It didn't work on every single filmmaker I reached out to, but it did for me to get who's in the film. And so I'm very humbled and lucky to get who was in the film. I'm very lucky to have gotten them, and they trusted me. The Peter Benchley, to answer your Peter Benchley question, I knew of that. And while I was outlining the documentary, that's when it clicked for me to make this documentary. Because like I was saying earlier, I didn't want to make a documentary that was just about the shark movie genre without there being any point, because I think you'll get bored fairly quick if you're just watching like shark movie after shark movie after shark movie after shark movie, because then you're watching the documentary and you're like, what is the point of, you know, this is about the shark genre, but you know, but there's nothing under, for me as a filmmaker, I needed a beating heart to it. And I've always been fascinated by Peter Benchley's story, because I think I read in the National Geographic that came out where he talked about how sharks don't want to kill you or eat you. They bite you and then they let you go. I'll never forget when I first read that. I was like, oh my God, really? Because up until then I thought sharks eat you. And he's the one that put that out there. And I've always have been a fan of his. I mean, growing up, I grew up with Jaws, and then when The Deep came out, you couldn't escape it. When The Island came out, you couldn't escape it. When The Beast came out and became a TV movie, it was, you know, and I was just a fan of Peter Benchley. So, I did know that, but I never thought to use that as the beating heart of the doc until later on after, you know, outlining it until I figured that out. And that's when I pulled the trigger to make it, because then I knew I had a through line for this movie, because I just didn't want to keep, you know, it's, you know, you don't want to keep, it's hard to keep shooting and shooting and shooting if you don't know where you're going, because, you know, time is money and, you know, all that stuff. So
I'll tell people that one of the hooks for me, and I think one of the hooks for the audience, for the film goer on this documentary, will be not the movies talked about, but you actually include clips of real news stories of people groups of people getting to be turning into shark hunting, shark hunters. And you actually show some footage, some photos of some rather grotesque shark kills. That unnerved me that people were led into this thinking pattern. It scared me more so than the movies themselves. I was watching real people on these you know, news clippings, news article clippings, and these photos. Real people going after sharks simply because of what they erroneously believed.
Yeah, it was just a different time. It was just a different time, unfortunately, and there wasn't no Shark Week back then and stuff like that. So people didn't. All you knew was those previous movie posters or adventure magazines where people were in shorts holding a knife with a shark coming at them. That's all they knew. And so there wasn't a lot of shark conservation back then. So once Jaws came out, people did believe these things were just out there and they're just going to devour you. And and unfortunately it led to all that, which is awful. And then especially certain movies were killing real sharks in them also, and but it was an awful time because I was even, you know, real animals were being murdered in movies back then also besides sharks. So yeah, it was a really awful time for to be an animal back then.
Yes.
Well, you actually mentioned on in the documentary, and I don't know if you talk about it, but you talk about Mako, Jaws of Death. And we've had filmmaker Bill Griffey on our show. He's a good friend of the show. And he has talked about some of the things that he used to did to the sharks to be able to use them in the film and so forth. And even he admitted at a few points that, not sure if we can get away with that today. That kind of feeling. But I really loved how you talked about, and you present the film as a kind of a counter view to Jaws, that this is a film about a guy who is obsessed with making people aware that sharks aren't the enemy.
Yeah, it's one of the rare movies where the villain is protecting the sharks,
right?
Which is cool. But as you know, Rebecca McKendry says in the movie, I love William Griffey. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get him, but I couldn't afford a very tight budget for this. And so I really couldn't afford to go fly out and get him. And plus I had like him. I've talked to him many times and it was heartbreaking. I couldn't get him. And, I wanted to fly out there, but I also had at a certain point, I had a tight schedule and I didn't have enough time to get him and many other people I wanted to get at a certain point. But yeah, when I was younger, I could watch like Tintarara, I could watch Mako, but as I get older, it's harder to watch those types of films knowing the background to it. You know, it's kind of rough, but I do like Mako. And like I was saying with the shark hunter, it was a different time, so animals were treated differently, you know. So
it reminds me of Cannibal Holocaust, the original, where they peeled off the turtle's shell. It's part of the movie.
Yeah, again,
just, this different time. And you think, you know, whoever, that laws were enacted to protect these animals for the sake of entertainment. Because as we're talking fiction, we're talking stories, right? You know, a novelist, a filmmaker, we're talking about entertainment, sitting in the theater eating popcorn. What we're not talking about is the murder of actual animals in their actual domain. That has always been uncalled for, in my opinion. And,
mine too.
Yeah.
I personally, you know, even though I can look at a movie and I know, oh, if it's an action film, and let's say we'll use John Wick as a prime example. when they supposedly killed the poor puppy, but they didn't really hurt it because, hey, we know now that if you were to do something like that, you'd get your butt kicked.
Yeah, I don't think, yeah, people wouldn't watch the movie. If
yeah, you get more than your butt kicked.
Yeah, you get probably arrested, yeah. But yeah, laws were different back then. Things were different, so.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. But yeah, I do have a question. Like, what are your takes on the newer Shark films?
I watch a majority of them. I grew up in a time where there wasn't a lot of everything I grew up on was genre, because before cable really took off, there just seemed to be genre on, like, growing up in New York, like Channel 5, Channel 9, Channel 11. I grew up Saturday mornings with awesome cartoons, with wrestling and kung fu films and Commando USA horror films. So I always Godzilla movies and King Kong movies on Thanksgiving. So I grew up with genre films, and shark movies was always my favorite because of Jaws. And so I've always been seeking out shark movies, and there was a long time where there was no shark movies coming out, and then they exploded, and I love them. I watch a majority of them, and I think today I don't mind them. I still watch them. I like them. But the thing is like, I know how to turn off my brain and watch certain movies that other people can't watch and immediately judge as bad. And it's just because I just grew up watching so much genre stuff. I loved the Sci-Fi Channel. I loved turning it on a Saturday night and seeing what crazy premise of a movie they were making. And I grew, and plus, like I said, there's a lot of movies I'm not credited on IMDb that I worked on, that I just know what it's like to make those movies and to work on them. And I just know how to judge them. And I think I just know how to watch stuff without being so hard. I mean, yeah, there's movies I don't like and I'm very hard on, but I don't know. I think I'm just able to remove myself when I watch certain B, C, D movies. You know, because a lot of there's a lot of shark movies coming out. A lot of them, the effects aren't good at all or whatever, but I still enjoy them all. I mean, I love them. I mean, I loved the Meg 2 that came out. I'm one of the rare people that loved it.
Yeah, that was an improvement over the original.
Yeah, I loved it. I love the Chinese shark movies that come out. I like, you know, I'll watch the Ouija sharks. I'll watch all that stuff. I loved Cocaine Shark that came out this year. I thought that was dope. Yeah. I thought Cocaine Shark was really cool.
Shark? Well, yeah, hello now.
Yeah, I liked it.
Wait, you got to recommend Ouija Shark to Anthony. Ouija Shark?
Oh, Ouija?
Watch that? He has an issue.
There's with no Ouija such thing as Ouija Shark.
There is.
Well, John.
Well, if there is, I ain't watching it. I don't mess with Ouija boards.
I'll tell you, I was thoroughly entertained. I'm glad that you bring into your documentary Sharktopus, because I was thoroughly entertained. I caught that by accident on streaming not too long ago, and I found myself just watching it. I realized this is nonsense, but I can't just click the clicker. I can't turn the channel. This is just kind of fun nonsense. It's ridiculous. It's God. It's out there. But I ended up watching the whole movie.
Yeah, that was. Yeah, I had to put it in the movie because it's part of the next level of what sharks became. Because in the 2000s, a lot of the shark movies were kind of ripoffs of Deep Blue Sea, or they were just doing the Jaws thing again, like with a lot of the Millennium movies where sharks were attacking beaches. And so Corman, well, I think it was Mega Shark vs. Giant Octopus came out. And then that kind of was like, oh, wait, movies can be silly. And I think that's when shark movies, I have an outline, and unfortunately I can't pull it up right now. I would go through, for this documentary, I outlined every shark movie and I followed the whole thing with the shark genre. But I, going off my memory right now, I believe it was Mega Shark vs. Giant Octopus that makes the shark movies silly.
Yes.
And then Sharktopus comes out, Corman does that. And now you're combining the shark with something. And then it just kept, and that's when sci-fi was around and they needed movies and DVD, and video stores were somewhat still around. DVDs were still selling. And so they just were churning these wild concepts out. And which was a good thing too, because it made sharks silly and not as frightening. Which is a positive thing.
I agree. That's a very positive change. Make no mistake, we are the dominant species on this earth. We are the aggressors. We are, give us every label, we've earned it up until this point. Sharks are dangerous, but as you said, treasure hunt, that's as far as it should go. It's a danger. When you're in the water, it's a danger. I think that's what made Spielberg's movie so effective, because he turned a danger into an existential threat. Go to the beach, it'll never be the same again, kind of a thing, right? A pivot back to just having it be a risk when you're in the water. Then more knowledgeable people get, and even with Shark Week, you still have the Discovery Channel. They have their shark programs. Educating the masses, do we really need, a public agency to come out and say, there's no such thing as Sharknadoes? I felt that there's a little bit of gamesmanship there. They got a little bit of a click traffic. But it just shows you, even now, people in a group are stupid. I've always felt that. You get a massive group of people, it's generally stupid. But if you start splicing them up individually, people can start thinking a little bit more clearer. And that's where, education comes from. That's the whole thing you said, pivoting back to these creatures are just part of the sea. They've been around a longer than we have. Knock on wood, they're around when we're gone, right? It would suck if we're the end of this species. Entertainment wise, bring on the Meg, bring on Chardonnay, bring on all the films. But yeah, in the real world, just give them their space, right?
Stay out of the water.
Well, can I don't know if we want to get into this too much, but I feel compelled to ask, did you want to talk a little bit, Stephen, about Great White and the Italians attempt to join the Spielberg train? Did you want to give a little bit about that? Because there was a lot of legal action involving Enzo Castellari's 1981 Shark Thriller.
To go back to the previous question, sure. Yeah, you're right. It's just, if you go in the water, everyone should just know, like, if you're gonna go in the water, it can get bit. It can happen. It happens. I mean, it doesn't mean they're bad. It just, it's like getting attacked by a bear or a rattlesnake. It's just, it's just,
it's a risk of the water, right?
It's a risk of the water. Yeah, exactly. You can drown. With Great White, that's just, I have a Great White poster behind me. It's probably my second favorite shark, second or third favorite shark movie, I think, after Jaws. Yeah, it's Jaws, Deep Blue Sea, Great White. Those are my three favorites. I love Great White.
Deep Blue Sea, excellent film. Excellent.
Yes, absolutely. But yeah, Great White's beautiful. I think it's one of his best films next to The Bronx Warriors. I think it's extraordinary. I think they were really trying to make a Jaws movie. So and Universal was able to ban it, which I wonder what other movies were banned, come to think of it, because it's weird that to this day you really cannot show that movie in a theater. Because I think they tried to show it out here at the New Beverly and it got pulled.
It was really something unprecedented, because you look at it and there was a number of other themes that, if they didn't riff entirely on, rip off entirely Jaws, they ripped off large portions of it, and none of those were legally gone after. We mentioned Tintorera, Bloody Waters. There was a number of other ones, even Piranha, which apes a lot of Jaws, and Joe Dante's own admission on the documentary. It was really kind of groundbreaking that Universal was able to weave through that and say, Great White, no, that's it, and they were successful at their litigation.
I think maybe if the Vic Morrow character wasn't in it, because you could really see he is Quint, and I've seen Cruel Jaws now so many times that I start to meld Great White and Cruel Jaws together, because I know Cruel Jaws uses Benchley's book, uses dialogue and scenes from Benchley's book in that. And they use scenes from Great White. I'm trying to remember. But yeah, Great White, they probably had the case because of Quint, the Quint character.
Sure.
That is a Great White shark. It is, and it's taking stuff from Jaws 2, which Michael Gingold says in our film. I mean, yeah, I guess they did kind of have a case, but Piranha was, I think they would have, they didn't go after Piranha, right? Because Joe Dante talked them out of it, that it's a spoof.
Sure.
And it's Piranhas. But yeah, I guess a great Jaws is a Great White. The Great White in The Last Shark, Great White, it's a Great White. So I guess there was things they were able to win with. But like you said, but I think out of all the shark movies, that's the one that really comes closest to Jaws. Like Tintorara, was more like sleazy and didn't really have sequences that you can compare to Jaws, really. It was kind of its own thing. Same thing with Mako. Mako was totally different, up right from the depths, even though it is ripping off, it's just ripping off aquatic. But I think when you really looked at Great White and you compared it to Jaws, there was just too many similarities. And I guess they were probably getting ready for Jaws 3. And they did not want, and they knew the movie was bad, and that was probably another reason to get it off screens fast. That's my personal take also with it. I could be wrong about that.
Thank you, Steven. I gotta ask this question for our listeners. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter. My name, Steven Scarlatta, one word. And you can find me on Instagram, it's the same thing also. I'm pretty much everywhere where there's social media with my same name, Blue Sky, that new thing. But I think I mostly use Twitter or X, whatever you call it now. And I'm on Instagram, but don't. I use Instagram and Twitter are my two main places where you can find me.
Anywhere, are you accompanied by John Williams music? When you wherever you go, you have like dun dun dun. Do you have the Jaws theme?
Oh, I probably nah, not Jaws. Probably more black metal when I walk around in my head. If you check out my Twitter, you'll see I'm also doing a podcast right now on this movie called The Neon Maniacs. If there's any fans of that, they can check that out, and then also check out this documentary on Shudder. Those are my two recent projects that are out there.
give us a quick hit on the Neon Maniacs. What is this about? Where can people find it? When is it going to be released? That kind of thing.
Season one is out right now, and my last episode is season one is 5 episodes, and season two is coming next year. And have you any of you seen the movie Neon Maniacs?
I have not yet. Tell us about it.
It's on Tubi. It came out in 1986, and it was a horror movie about 12 killers. The advertised 12 killers, but it's really 14. And it's a very strange movie that has a very precise cult following. So I don't know why I spent so much time making a podcast for a movie that probably has the most precise, smallest cult following, but that's what it pretty much is. It's a very strange movie, and there's been lots of rumors about it because it had problems during production that it shut down and then it had to start back up. But like I said, it's 12 killers, or really 14 killers, going after these two young girls. And and it's done during the heyday of slashers in the 80s it was made. And it's a very strange, dreamy movie that just kind of caught on with a cult following. I think if throughout the years on Halloween, people would just visit it and revisit it. And at first you watch it and you don't really like it, but somehow it kind of grows on you because it's very strange. It's unlike any other 80s slasher movie, and it's been tough to, and it was tough to get for a while also. And so, yeah, so I ended up doing a very long breakdown of that movie as a podcast. And you can find it. It's called the podcast. The movie is called Neon Maniacs, and the podcast is called In the Shadows of the Neon Maniacs. And that's because there's a poem read in the beginning of the movie that says that. So that's the name of the podcast. It's on iTunes and Spotify and all the podcast places, but I just started releasing it a couple of weeks back. So I'm releasing the first 5 episodes now, and then next year the final 5 episodes are coming out. So we go through pretty much the entire movie, and we also interview people. I found some of the maniacs to interview by going through the white pages and calling everyone with their names, and I eventually found a few of them like that. So that was cool.
Congrats.
Well, yeah. Steve and Scarlotta, thank you very much for joining us. I am the fan of the shark movie, whether it's Burt Reynolds' Shark, whether it's Blue Water White Death, the documentary, or whether it's The Meg 2. If you have a shark in it and the shark is a protagonist, I'm there. And I just want to say thank you for your documentary Sharksploitation, which is out now on Shudder. It is highly recommended, folks. You can even go to Shudder right now and sign up for, I think they have a 7-day free trial. So here's a pitch out to Shudder. Go to Shudder. It's great. Check it out. Sign up and watch the documentary Sharksploitation. It is fantastic. It's informative. And you will gain more knowledge than you ever thought possible about shark movies.
Well, thank you for spreading the word about the documentary. I appreciate that.
You are quite welcome. It's very entertaining, and I hope that you have unbounded success with it.
Greatly appreciated. Thank you.
You're so welcome, Steven.
And Anthony, do you want to take us out with the Alamega statement?
No.
I guess Joe, you want to take us out with the Alamega?
I think I'm doing it tonight, believe me.
Go ahead,
gentlemen. No. Remember, people, keep watching horror movies, keep America strong, and we'll see you guys on the next Grim and Bloody podcast. Bye.
Nailed it. Thanks a lot. And Anthony's the one that usually stops the recording, but he's had to step out for a minute, so we'll just make sure that he cuts, you know, this part of it. Steven, again, that was just a tremendous documentary. And I can usually, like you've talked about before, I can usually get bored easily if it's just a standard documentary about the movies, but you made it about so much more. And it was really intriguing and it gripped me all the way through.
Oh, right on. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
How dare you make me learn and get entertained at the same time?
Yeah, so well, what are you gonna Well, happy you enjoyed that aspect of it. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it was fabulous. And I'll tell you what, did you reach out at all to Spielberg? Did you like send a letter just not even thinking you were gonna get any kind of response? Did you just try for the heck of it?
Oh yeah, numerous times. Yeah. Absolutely. And,
because he is the kind of guy that I think that every five, you know, like every, you know, you could ask him 500 times and he won't do it. And on the 501st time, he just has a burr up his ass and just, you know, hey, I'll sit and talk with you, for, you know, about it for a while. He's just that kind of guy, it seems like.
Oh, I wish that happened.
Yeah. But you got Joe Dante, I imagine. Was that difficult to get?
No, I was very lucky to get, like I said, I think I was lucky that I did the Jodorowsky's Dune documentary, and it was well known with filmmakers, and it was treated, you know, that film was treated very professionally and not exploitive, so I think filmmakers, when they saw that credit, that's why I was able to get who I was able to get in the movie.
And I imagine that Joe, you know, he's a guy, he'll talk for 2 hours or more. You ever watch his Trailers from Hell podcast? Oh. He's a lot of fun.
He is.
He'll sit and talk about about everything, not just his his films. So I imagine
he was awesome.
I imagine you had ample footage to utilize.
Oh yeah, he was awesome.
Yeah. But anyway, well, thank you, Stephen. You were terrific, and I think Anthony puts these out probably in 3 to 4 days, and I'll send you a link once it gets published, and we'd be honored if you would share it on your social media with all your fan base.
No, right on, man. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Thank you very much, Stephen.
Right, have a good one.
You too. And happy holidays, Stephen.
Oh, thank you. Same to you.
Oh, you're welcome. As soon as
I have to see if there's a Santa Shark movie out there.
Oh, there is.
There is.
There is.
I wouldn't doubt it. And Stephen did it. I blame him.
Santa Jaws. It's called
Santa Jaws. Okay.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thanks a lot.